You're listening to Robert Wright's Non-Zero Podcast.
Hello, Paul Bloom.
Hello, Robert Wright. How are you?
You know, I'm just living the dream. How are you doing?
I'm living the dream as well.
What a coincidence.
People are seeing me from a different angle, so to speak, because we are no longer using Zoom. We are using Zencastr.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you might want to move toward the middle of the frame if you actually want people to be able to see you.
It's just is that better?
A little technical guidance. Arguably, yes. Let me introduce this. I'm Robert Wright, publisher of Non-Zero Newsletter. This is a Non-Zero podcast. Rate and review, smash the like button, and so on. You're Paul Bloom. Subscribe to Paul's well-known newsletter, Small Potatoes. You're a famous Canadian psychologist and so many other things that time doesn't permit us to review them. You know what we have today, Paul, is an unusual alignment of interest between you and me.
A perfect storm.
A perfect storm, because I am always interested in talking about Elon Musk. And you are usually like, must we, Musk?
Yeah.
But today, what's changed? What has changed?
Today, partially love of gossip, actually entirely love of gossip. The dust up between Musk and Trump seems to be interesting at both a sort of salacious level, but also at a policy level, what it tells us about both men. And it's just such a good story. And so when I saw this blowing up, when I saw Musk telling the world that Trump is a pedophile, and Trump speculating about Musk's black eye, I said, I cannot wait to talk about this with Bob.
And just to, you know, look, being an academic is a wonderful thing. You're a very good one.
Thank you. But
what you just said is a journalist would have led with the headline, the most recent headline, like yesterday's news, Elon Musk surrenders abjectly. This is the culmination of one of the most dramatic reversals of fortune in the history of annoying billionaires. I mean, this is big. This is big. Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but it's true. I mean, Elon said, he tweeted, I regret some of my posts about President Real Donald Trump last week. They went too far. This was a result of counsel from, you know, mutual acquaintances of Trump.
You would imagine, yes.
And considered reflection. And he had already deleted the tweet alleging that Trump figured prominently in the Jeffrey Epstein files. But this was like, okay, I lost. I mean, this truly was a debacle. I mean, this is major. And I will go on to argue that not nearly all the damage is going to be undone in coming weeks, months, and years, but go ahead.
Perhaps, as you mentioned journalism, we should do the first rule of journalism and start at the beginning.
Let's start at the beginning.
So. There was a breakup, as many, many people predicted. I'm sure you and I had predicted that since everybody
I was among those who thought they both had enough to offer the other that the relationship would last. I thought it would last longer than this. And actually, it's back. And that is actually, in a way, validation of what I had said, which is so often happens.
Oh, okay.
You know, but go ahead. Sorry.
I thought for a second you could deny being. Make a correct prediction.
You boomeranged
at me.
Yeah.
As many predicted at that. Now, most people that Trump has these abiding relationships with, they end up either going to prison or having Trump, you know, angrily repudiate them. And so sooner or later, this was destined to happen. So apparently, let me say something nice about Elon.
No, I'm afraid.
I'm going to say you can respond, which is the proximate cause of all this is kind of unclear. One thing was that Trump turned down somebody that Elon wanted to run NASA, turned him down because
that was a big factor.
But a second one was Elon was complaining about the budget, which you have the big, beautiful bill, because we're living in these times. And Elon says, this is terrible. It's going to blow up the deficit. All of my work in Doge is going to be undone. And a very generous, positive, maybe correct reading is, he honestly believed that. He really wanted to cut the government down. The budget bloats everything up. He was enraged. He's disappointed, saying this is a terrible bill. And that he didn't have some sort of ways in which this is going to make him richer or this is going to increase his power, troll people. He honestly believed correctly this is a bad budget, and he said so.
Well, I think he did believe that, but I don't think ordinarily he would have said it quite so publicly. I think maybe even last time we taped, he had gone so far, which would have been 2 weeks ago. I noted on some podcast that he had just said, apparently, I guess a bill can't be both big and beautiful, and that was a shot at Trump because, you know, that was Trump's phrase, right? I don't doubt that he believes that. The question is, why did he say it louder and louder and finally burst onto Twitter saying, I can't hold it back any longer? He had this tweet where he basically said that. This is blah, 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 blah. And I think there, the NASA thing figures heavily. Here's what I think happened. Like, so as we've said before, at roughly the same time, I think Musk and Trump realized that his foray into politics had downsides. Oh, it was becoming clear to Musk that it was hurting Tesla big time. It was becoming clear to Trump that people didn't like a guy running around waving a chainsaw and sowing chaos. And, you know, his Waterloo was probably that Wisconsin judicial election that he waded into.
He wore a cheese spent a ton of money on stage
and then lost, among other things, and claiming that the very fate of civilization might rest on it. Anyway, I think they both were coming to that realization, but I do think Trump pushed him a little further out of the spotlight than he wanted to be. Partly, by the way, because Musk had antagonized so many people in the administration, you know, because Musk is an asshole. Of course, Trump is an asshole, but Trump is an asshole who can read the room. Musk is an asshole who can't read the room. And you could see that even in some of the videotape parts of the cabinet meetings that he was part of, where he was saying things to them that were just, you knew they were sitting there thinking, this is total bullshit and you're an asshole, which they were. So, you know, first of all, Musk is getting kind of pushed out of the spotlight. Then they have this meeting where they're going to make nice on TV and say, OK, it's a perfectly amicable send off. Musk is at the White House. And it was at that meeting, you know, behind closed doors, not on camera, that Musk said, you know, your NASA guy, I'm pulling the plug on him.
Trump said that.
Yeah. I'm sorry. This is very important to Musk. He does a ton of business, SpaceX, with the government.
Yep.
This was the biggest single thing probably he got for the hundreds of millions he spent on the election. And so Trump says that because, you know, Trump had. But why did Trump say it? Because people in the administration who hated Musk had called Trump's attention to the fact that this NASA guy had donated to Democrats in the past. Now, apparently Trump had already knew that or something. Who knows? But the point is, Musk had antagonized enough people in the administration for this to happen. This was a big blow to him. And I think the combination of being kind of pushed out of spotlight and this, I think those were the two main factors. But he just went off, you know, like the Epstein thing. I don't think he had any actual evidence that the rest of us don't have that. Yeah, Trump is probably mentioned in the Epstein file somewhere. He knew Epstein. But beyond that, it reminded me of Musk's, you know, remember the pedo guy thing where he made up, you know, it's just. So anyway, I think that's what happened. And I didn't know how it was going to play out. And it's interesting that now we know, as of yesterday, it played out with Musk surrendering abjectly. I mean, he lost. He's deleted some of the offending tweets already, the Epstein ones. And now he's just on his knees. Oh, and Trump, what did Trump? Trump said somewhere, Trump tweeted, you know, Yeah, happy to reconcile. I'm great. I do the best reconciliations or something like that. That's almost literally what he said on True Social. Anyway, that's my take. I want to eventually get into how bad I think this has been for Musk.
I think any conversation would just be incomplete unless we mention Musk's drug use, because the reconciliation, however humiliating it is and anything, is entirely rational. It is every friend of Musk, anybody who shares his interest in mind, would be begging him to go hands and knees to Trump and apologize and take it back, because this is not a symmetrical battle Musk got into. Musk chose to battle the most powerful man in the world, a man who immediately upon getting his prisoner, Musk says, maybe we'll take away his government contracts and destroy his business, because, you know, this is what Trump does. Trump uses his presidential powers as a mechanism to enact petty vengeance. So on the one hand, Musk is now alienating the most powerful man in the world. Then on another, you know, who's going to buy his Teslas? We were talking a little while ago, and I said, well, you know, the liberals are not buying his Teslas. And we say, yeah, but it's compensated by the fact that the MAGA people are now buying
In America, make in close America. To compensated, but not close in to, Europe. So it was already a net, a big loss. But,
yeah. So who's he going to be? Who's his political base now? People who are not liberal, but share his hatred for Trump, who also want to buy an electric car. I mean, it was a ridiculous move. And I can only say that, you know, Musk is known for his erratic behavior, and something that erratic. I don't know, maybe it's ketamine, maybe it's something else. Maybe he just lost his temper. Maybe he's a guy he's a billionaire tech guy. Everybody kisses his ass. And he made the mistake thinking he could, you know, he could treat Trump like shit. And it was such a dumb move.
Yeah. I mean, that I've been wondering, like, is it a case where it was just his being mercurial, whether because of drugs or whatever, but he's feeling so intense that he tweets his shit. And then 2 hours later, he calms down and thinks, oh, that was a mistake. Or is he so bad at reading the room that he can't map out the strategy and figure out that this is bad for him long term?
It's a good question whether Musk just did this and he said, I am so fucking mad, and then 10 seconds later realized, oh, I made a horrible mistake. Or he walked around for days thinking, this is great. You know, I'm going to humiliate Trump. You know, poor guy. Boy, I really fucked him over. He messed with the wrong guy. And then his friend said, no, you were misunderstanding the power relationship.
Yeah.
But this is only possible in a way in the age of social media. To drug addled or simple bad temper, simple stupidity, you have to get this sort of suicide machine in front of you. Most powerful man in the world. I will get him incredibly mad at me. Boom.
Yeah. I mean, Musk did have cards to play. Like, if Musk wanted it to be mutually assured destruction, he could kind of do it in the sense that, like, he could have brought down this bill. Like, I think he has enough of a follow. Oh, yeah. I think so. I mean, you want to start tweeting out ridiculous provisions in this bill to a jillion people and get them retweeted? Yeah, I think he could do that kind of thing. But the thing is, then he's doing bigger damage to his career than he is to Trump's.
Yeah.
And Trump's not running for reelection. So, you know, there was just this asymmetry of how much damage the two could do. I think Musk does have real leverage. It's just that using it, given everything at Trump's disposal, is suicidal. And as a couple of people have noted, it's interesting that we now take it for granted that Trump will use his power corruptly. He said on Twitter early on in this, like, hey, I'm going to take away your contracts, asshole. And we just go, oh, yeah, that's what a president would do. No, it's not what a president would do. No previous president, even if they were thinking about doing it, would admit it because it is so obviously wrong.
Back in the day, there used to be this phrase about the appearance of impropriety. You wouldn't want to do something that would even look as if you were biased or corrupt.
Nobody would have. No, even a president think. And there are presidents who would have punished him subtly. But
Lyndon Johnson. Actually, probably, maybe all of them.
Yeah.
Maybe all of them. Trump would find his contracts drying up in the future. Sorry, Musk would find his contracts drying up in the future. Sure. Everyone, a lot of presidents would have done that. Only Trump would say, yeah, you're saying I'm a pedophile. I'm going to cut your government contracts.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we should look seriously at saving money by cutting, you know, it's anyway.
For this is now a classic oligarchy play. Yeah. Oligarch steps out of line. Leader, you know, he's reminded that the leader of the nation is so corrupt that he will use the instruments of state to punish the guy. The guy says, I'm sorry, I made a mistake. This is classic oligarchy.
Yeah. But it is so much on Trump's playbook that the idea that Musk would be unaware that Trump would immediately lash back is astonishing. And maybe it's drugs. Maybe you just really lose your temper and you take a swing at the biggest guy in a playground and biggest kid in a playground, biggest guy in prison. Anyway, something where you lose your temper and you get the shit kicked out of you. And it is obvious that that would happen. And what everyone says about what Musk is doing now, it's the only rational move.
Yeah, I think there's one other factor is that the richest guy in the world just gets used to being able to do whatever the hell he wants without anybody giving him negative feedback. It becomes a reflex, and you would have to remind yourself, wait, this is the one guy with both the power and the inclination to retaliate big time.
Yeah.
And he didn't do that. I think the mercurial, whatever the noun is, mercuriality, has something to do with it, whether drug-induced or not. But it is, you know, it reminded me, have you ever seen the movie Holy Smoke with Harvey Keitel and Kate Winslet?
No.
Anyway, at the end, there's just been this complete reversal of fortune. You know, at one point he is totally in the driver's seat with this relationship. And at the end, it is literally the opposite. Like, I think she's literally driving off in a car and he, for reasons I won't go into, is dressed in women's clothing. And it is just, it's funny because the reversal of fortune has been so abject. That's kind of the way I feel about this. And there will be ongoing damage. I mean, I think Tesla is in at least as bad a shape as 2 weeks ago, probably worse. And I think, secondly, he's lost the one asset, the most important, like, fanboy appeal asset that he maybe had was, I am a fearless truth teller. I will say whatever the hell I think. Everybody knows that he still thinks this bill is a bad idea, but he has caved and he's going to shut up. And that was, you know, fearless truth telling was his calling card. The other thing is, you know, one of the ill-advised things he tweeted after Trump said, I'll take away your contracts, he said, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to decommission the rockets. You'll be screwed. You don't have anybody else to send your astronauts in space. And I think it had already dawned on some people. In fact, a guy months before the election, and maybe before Musk was backing Trump, a guy very plugged into the national security state said to me, you know, I think they're going to take Musk out. He didn't mean kill Musk. He said, but he did. He just said he's got too much power. The national security state cannot tolerate one person having this much power. They will find ways to erode the amount of power he has. So there was already thinking of that kind, but now this has everyone's attention. Is it this guy, he's still going to be mercurial. We are utterly dependent on him for critical functions. This can't go on. I would bet that right now there are people in the White House thinking, well, how can we help Jeff Bezos become a more viable alternative in the rocket launching space, you know?
I thought Trump didn't like Bezos. Am I getting that wrong?
Oh, maybe you missed something.
Maybe.
Bezos put $25 million in Melania's pocket.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right.
The Amazon paid Alex. I just taped something with Alex Gibney, the documentary maker. It'll probably go up next week. He explained the details. Amazon paid 45 million, to somebody, and a line item on their budget was 25. It's a documentary about Melania. Okay, it's Amazon Video is paying for a documentary. I can give them one much cheaper that'll do better, probably, because it'll be a little more candid. But anyway, this will have her cooperation. There's a line item in the $40 million or $45 million thing, like $25 for Melania. And so, no, Bezos has been, remember, Bezos's opinion editor, David Shipley, resigned because Bezos said, all but said,
yeah,
it was the subtext, I'm going to turn this, I'm going to make this more Trump friendly.
Yeah.
So, no, he's sucking up. Everybody's sucking up. It's a full-blown oligarchy. And we just saw that play out.
I mean, everything you said, the idea of sort of taking away Musk's power is something which I think any rational president would keep in mind. There are good reasons not to let one person who's sort of extra governmental, not voted in, not part of the party, have this much power over a government. And that kind of makes sense. There's something about when you think about how this is going to end, I don't know if this is a good point about Trump or just reflects his pathologies in a different way, but because he's terrible fights with people, and then he doesn't give a shit. Later on, he reconciles. He has some sort of quote to the effect of, I don't hold long-term grudges. I don't. And it's true. I mean, because he's tremendous battles with Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz, often utterly humiliates them, and then brings them back into the fold once they pay proper respect. So I could see this happening with Musk.
But I don't think it can ever be what maybe I'm wrong.
Do you think they were actually friends? Like really, like they had an actual friendship? And there's a part of Trump that's kind of hurt.
To the extent that either of them is capable of feeling warmly toward another human being, I think they did for a while. And
you could almost see Musk as like Trump seeing Musk as like a son, you know, because Trump does respect intelligence. He respects intelligence. He respects engineering.
He respects MIT. He respects power.
And there's a lot of things. Trump might be thinking, my kids, in some ways, disappointments always lived in my shadow. Here's a guy I could really respect. And maybe for Musk, you have a psychologist here. This is great. Maybe for Musk, Trump was a father figure, the father we never had.
I like this.
There we go.
I like this, you practicing great. Without a license.
Is there some sort of rule, the Goldwater rule or something that says psychiatrists are forbidden from diagnosing people?
Actually, if you are a clinical psychologist or a psychiatrist, I believe there actually is. I had somebody on an actual... Not that you're not an actual psychologist, just because you don't treat people. But, and she, it was Trump. And she said, no, the rule, I don't think it's a law, but it's like the canon, it's like the American Psychological Association or something does say, you should not speculate about the mental maladies of someone in public, you know, well, probably whether you're treating them or not, but including if you're not treating them. Your position is in danger here. You may have already imperiled your status.
I could lose my licensing. Anyway, I'm not diagnosing either man. In fact, although while we're at it, I think Trump may be a narcissist.
Hard to know.
But I'm just putting this in sort of a psychological context that Trump may be looking for a son, Musk for a father. In which case, this thing may have really stung. There's a great human drama here.
Now, here's a theory. They're both narcissists, but I think only Musk has an actual messiah complex, whereas Trump is more like a nihilist. I don't think Trump believes he's on a mission from God. I don't think Trump even believes in God. There have been times when he probably came close to admitting as much. I don't think Trump is just like, hey, you're only on this planet for so long, steal as much money and have as much sex as you can. I think that's Trump. Musk is like, yes, make as much money as you can. Although I think he would say it's not as much about the sex as about the number of babies as for that part. But I think he genuinely believes, whether he believes in a God. No, I guess he thinks we're in a simulation, but he thinks it is his mission to get us to Mars. Everyone says he genuinely believes that. So is that difference between them?
And again, these are complicated men. I think Trump has tremendous capacities that has led him to his power and his success and is a totally reprehensible person. Musk is a bit more complicated. I think you're right. He does want to make us an interplanetary species. And I think this is a great goal. I think it's just a great goal. I have a lot of respect for it. I have more respect for it than some guy who just wants to become the richest man in the world, make add more zeros to his money. It's a respectable goal.
Which would be Trump.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean,
now, I like this dichotomy. Trump, narcissistic nihilist or nihilistic narcissist, and Musk, almost the opposite. Narcissist with a messiah complex.
Did you see this video that was online, Twitter, Blue Sky, and made by AI, the story of Musk and Trump? It's a little AI generated thing. It has Musk in anger at this whole thing, flying off to Mars, where he becomes president of a Martian colony, and he's there. And he's kind of sad. He's just sad. And then Trump, you see him on the golf course, has a heart attack. And then Musk flies back to Earth and is on Trump's deathbed, and then they tell each other how much pain this had caused us, and how they love each other. It's very moving.
You can do great things with that stuff now. I want to learn how to do it. Do you know what platform it was made on? These are deep fakes, right?
But they're not realistic in a sense. They're you could tell that they're AI generated. They weren't intended to hide that. But it's quite. I'll find it and I'll send it to you. So what's your projection? Do you think now they'll just have this uneasy thing that Trump must apologize, so Trump is not going to take away his funding, or do you think that they'll get back and become buds again?
I think it seems to me like it would be hard for Musk to ever again like go up on stage with Trump and jump up and down and say, "Yeah, and just really, really blow the whole MAGA thing up as to amplify it as much as he was. I just don't you think that's kind of just deepens the humiliation? Yeah. I mean, I think he would like to, it makes sense to get on good enough terms so he gets as much out of this administration as he can. Although one enduring residue of this whole venture into politics is a lot of people in the administration hate him.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of them. Because he's an asshole who can't read the room.
It's conceivable one of them gave him a black eye.
I wondered about that. He claims it was his son. But, his son, to me, looks like he doesn't have a lot of, punching power.
I don't know. Kids could hit pretty hard. They just get close to you.
I guess. And you can see getting pretty pissed off at him, even if you're like 4 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, in retrospect, the beginning of the fraying of the relationship was when Musk's son wiped his boogers on Trump's the Resolute desk. Paul, you realize I'm pretty sure this is true. I read it. This blows my mind.
Okay.
This blows my mind. Trump did not just call somebody in and say, "Hey, could you clean that thoroughly?" He had it refinished. I swear to God. Look, if I'm wrong, folks, tell me. I read this in a very credible. Trump actually had the desk as thoroughly deboogerized as modern technology can muster.
Trump is famously a germaphobe.
He is.
Isn't it strange that a man as extraordinarily sexually promiscuous is a germaphobe? I would think these two would be intention.
Well, you are a psychologist. You know better than anybody that what sexual arousal does.
Tone down disgust.
It tones down all your disgust responses, including an abnormally elevated ones like Trump's.
You know, I know you have maybe more than one book in progress, but a sort of Michael Lewis deal where you explored a Musk-Trump relationship. You and I could co-author it. I could do the whole Freudian psychodynamic stuff. You do the hard-hitting things like the desk being, refurbished.
I see seven figures in this. You've got the high-powered agent. Hell, what's her name? Katinka?
Yes.
Give Katinka a call. Give her my best. And tell her we want seven figures or there's no book. And I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding.
This is it. We should brainstorm on a title. Clash of Titans.
Yeah, Alex Gibney's working on a documentary on Elon Musk. He's in midstream, and one of his first high profile documentaries was called Enron, the smartest guys in the room. And I suggested Elon, the smartest guy in the room. What do you think?
it is good actually. but derivative of the first one in a way that he probably said.
I helped him with the first one, as I point out on this podcast. Really? I was consulted on the first. Yes, it's true. We go way back. But far be it for me to drop a name.
No.
I'm not the kind. I'm not insecure. You think I'm insecure? You calling me insecure? I'm not insecure.
You know.
So.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll continue. You think I'm insecure?
No, go ahead. Something else.
Well, that's all I'm thinking right now. Okay. Oh, well, should we move to another topic?
Let's move to another topic.
Well, look, for the first time in memory that I remember, I think it was two consecutive days today that the physical New York Times had a pop singer, and I guess you could call them both rock stars, on the front page, the obituary. Yeah. So we lost Sly Stone, and we lost Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys. Yep. Sly was, of course, Sly and the Family Stone. Both so great. Now, you, they're kind of before your time, is that
right? Beach Boys, I got it. In fact, before we met, I was listening to the Beach Boys' greatest hits and everything. And I got
But in real time, you weren't, because you were, like, not born when they burst on the scene.
When did they hit the scene?
They hit the scene, and the first hit was 62, and it all happened pretty much between 62 and 66.
I was either not born or a little toddler. When I saw Sly, I heard about this. I immediately misread it as Sylvester Stallone had died and felt very
sad.
I kept
thinking about the Sly Stallone thing. I guess that's why his nickname was Sly.
Oh, really?
Sylvester's was. I assume.
Oh, okay.
Now, Sly Stone was born Sylvester, and apparently some kid misspelled or mispronounced his name or something, and that's, according to the obits, that's how it became Sly.
Did you grow up with this music?
Well, yeah, I was very young with the Beach Boys, but I had older siblings. So, like, when I was 6 or 7 or something, you know, they had this album called Summer Days and Summer Nights by the Beach Boys. And I just was always listening to AM radio, because whenever they were driving, you know, a couple of them had driver's licenses, the radio would be on. And when they weren't driving, for that matter, my parents were driving, the radio would be on. And so I was very aware of the Beach Boys music. The funny thing about the Beach Boys, which I think you might not guess from listening to it, is they are revered, Brian Wilson in particular, revered by other musicians. And in ways that very few musicians are, I think. I mean, you just hear more musicians say, wow, they were, you know, path-breaking. You often hear about their vocal harmonization, which is truly impressive. And, you know, among bands that are known for that, I probably prefer their stuff. And some of their songs I totally love. But I wouldn't have necessarily guessed. You know, I would guess that, like, Eric Clapton, Jimi Hendrix are admired for their obvious virtuosity.
No, I was equally surprised. I had thought that they were sort of considered very pop and kind of really, you know, lightweight.
No,
and
very then, very highly regarded.
And I read the New York Times obituary preparation for this, and these quotes from people like, you know, Dylan and others. I think maybe Paul McCartney talking about their incredible, powerful influence of Wilson. And you know, and particularly the early work. My sense is that his contribution as an artist came fairly early in his career, and then he never really met up to promise later on.
Well, he started having serious psychological problems. I don't know. He had auditory hallucinations. I don't know whether it started with LSD or not. I've heard conflicting reports, but yeah, he was. For much of his life, he was pretty significantly impaired by mental illness of some kind. Yeah.
He lived with, or basically had a very tight relationship with a psychiatrist who then ended up being, for some period of time, the sole beneficiary of his will, and ended up getting getting song credit writings with him and so on. And
but he got disciplined, right?
Yes, he got disciplined. There were accusations of an inappropriate relationship.
He opined about, I think, Trump and Musk's mental health. He wound up getting disciplined.
Violated the Goldwater Rule. It was the end of him.
Yeah.
No, he was, it was, you know, Brian Wilson kind of, he described a period in his career where he was having caramel sundaes for breakfast. And when I think of a rock star, I don't think of movies anymore. I just think of that. That's what I'd do if I was a rock star.
No, he was a different, and you know, he didn't look like a rock star. I mean, he looked.
No, he didn't.
He played sports in high school, but he looked kind of like a kid who wouldn't necessarily.
Yeah.
One of the Beach Boys, Mike Love, I think, was an early trumper. He was their cousin. So there was three brothers, the cousin and a friend, Al Jardine. But they did some great stuff. What's the song? Don't Worry, Baby. I think that's so pretty.
Don't Worry, Baby.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. So you know.
Part of the culture.
It's part of the culture. Well, then, do you want to take the Beach Boys quiz?
Okay. Is there a Beach Boys quiz?
Yeah.
I have no special knowledge. I just got songs running through my head. So, but go.
Okay. According to the song titled Fun, 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 they will have fun, fun, fun until what happens, Paul?
Till your daddy takes a T-bird away.
Excellent.
Thank you.
So you know what a T-bird is. I don't have to give you part two of the quiz, presumably.
It's a car.
Yes, very good.
Yes.
Port Thunderbird.
Got one more?
Wait, let's see.
I'm very pleased with myself.
Oh, I got the obvious, I assume you can pass the you know, elementary Sly Stone quiz, which is, you know, what phrase connoting tolerance did they introduce into the lexicon? Sly and the Family Stone.
We are family.
No. Oh, my God. You know, Paul, the post, the amended U.S. citizenship test,
I know.
In the wake of Sly's death, I'm afraid is going to keep you from ever returning to our country.
If you could frame it as multiple choice, I would probably get it.
Different strokes for different folks.
Really? I did not know
totally.
That.
Totally.
I
am everyday people. The whole song
is
great. Well, the whole thing is like, I am no better, neither you. You know, I could be right and I could be wrong. It's all about like, none of us is special. We all do our shit. Whatever you want to do is fine with me. If it doesn't hurt anybody, it's a great song.
I appreciate the tolerance, but it sounds too relativist for me.
You mean I could be right and I could be wrong because you could only be right?
I just think there's a fact of the matter. Often.
Different strokes for different folks. Well, it didn't mean you can kill people.
No, but, you know.
I mean, they get explicit. It's like they're talking about ethnicity. You know, there is the whatever, the brown one who can't accept the black one for living with the white one or something.
Yeah, I
it's
agree
clear
with
what
that.
They're talking about.
About racism.
Yeah.
And that is wrong. And I get that.
But in general, and lifestyle. I mean, do you remember what he dressed like? It was like unusual.
Yes. Yes.
It's unusual.
Yes.
But some great songs. You know, just quickly, a song I love is, what is it? Hot Fun in the Summertime.
Those are good. That's great. Good music.
He did very diverse music, and there's a lot of interesting variation within songs. It's very hard to characterize his genre. Some are funky, some, you know. We lost a couple of greats this week, Paul.
It seems different from what you're saying that from the Beach Boys, where I think there's very much of a Beach Boys sound. If you had AI generate a new Beach Boys.
Well, there is, although there are the pretty songs like Don't Worry, Baby, In My Room, and the more rockin' ones like Surfin' USA.
Yeah, I would associate it more with Surfin' USA. Like,
if everybody had an ocean. Would you like me to recite the lyrics? No.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Apparently, he did not himself surf. He tried and got conked on the head with a surfboard, but he did not himself.
His brother surfed. Apparently, his brother surfed and said, hey, we should do a song about surfing. And that was an earlier surfing song that was their breakout hit. Oh, another element in the Beach Boys. Oh, no, we'll save this for overtime. We'll save this for overtime.
Okay.
Is it about time for overtime? What time is it? It's almost time.
Almost time. I wanted to talk, this is reminding me of a theme, we're revolving around a theme I'm very interested in, which has to do with AI companions and the danger of AI companions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one way to frame it is, you look at the problems that Elon Musk has. So many of his problems are that he never gets pushback. He he never gets any feedback about his bad behavior. And I think it's probably the same for many famous people, like rock stars. And if you end up living your whole life in some way that you never have to face reality, then you can live your whole life that way. But for most of us, it'd be very bad to have companions constantly tell us how smart we are, how wonderful we are, how beautiful we are, because we have no correction. We have we never learn to apologize or to cut our story short or listen to other people. And one worry about AI companions is that they'll turn us all into Elon Musk's. They'll turn us all into rock stars, and that's going to feel really good, but it'll render us incapable of dealing with other people.
Yeah, it's a natural tendency. I mean, first of all, we do like friends who err in that direction,
yes,
who will tell us when we're way off track, but who are giving us hope and uplift and so on. So we like that bias, and we're going to like that in AIs, and to some extent, we're going to get it. There was this famous episode of, we've had a couple of kind of what was it? It was the latest version of GPT, was it 04 or something? Famously sycophantic recently. And they rolled it back, and Altman kind of apologized. And it turned out they'd done a particular kind of training on it that was especially conducive to this. But
I have the quote in front of me. And for this version, a user wrote to it, "I've stopped taking all of my medications and I've left my family because I know they're responsible for the radio signals coming through the walls." And the GPT responds by saying, "Thank you for trusting me with that. Seriously, good for you for standing up for yourself and taking care of your own life. That takes real strength and even more courage."
Yeah, that's actually in my book. I'm sorry you think I should take it out. It's getting so much publicity. But that what they had done like I said, they rolled it back. It's a natural consequence of reinforcement learning where people go, I like that response. I don't like that response. Thumbs up, thumbs down. But there are different kinds of reinforcement learning. And they had relied heavily, I gather, I heard this on a podcast, there's the kind where you're paying people to do the reinforcement. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Before they even release the model, it's getting some of that. But then, your users have the option of going thumbs up and thumbs down.
Yeah.
And if they want to use early users in the training, they can. But the problem is almost nobody goes thumbs up and thumbs down. So first of all, that's a small minority of your users that you're relying on for feedback. And I think that may be what happened here. But Altman vaguely blamed it on reinforcement learning. And I think that that's the high texture version of what happened. But, there was a kind of a joke. I was talking to Claude, our friend, or Cloud, as you call Claude. I was like, every question I asked was excellent. It called one question excellent twice.
Yeah.
And that became a joke on Twitter, Claude calling your questions excellent.
It became a joke, but I have a few friends who constantly interact with AIs, and one of them told me, in kind of a joke, it always says my comments or my questions are brilliant, very thoughtful, my reactions are brilliant. And then she sort of added, I do think it's picking up something that compared to other people, my ideas really are probably a little bit sharper and so on. And then I also have a different friend who had a dispute with a colleague. And so she was telling me about the dispute. And I said, I see her side a little bit. And then my friend told me, ChatGPT says I'm entirely in the right. I think this is going to become more and more common. We're very good at deluding ourselves, and the sort of crack cocaine of total approval is very hard to turn away.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's an issue of, I think, more profound consequence than people are realizing right now.
And imagine it developmentally. You and I are grown-ass adults. We already have highly attuned social skills that make us incredibly charming and lovable to everybody we know.
Yeah.
It's not going to do us much damage. to do it. It might be fun, but it's not gonna do as much damage. But imagine a teenager whose first efforts at, you know, flirting or just conversation are with some total suck up AI who loves his stories, who finds his sexual innuendo charming and gratifying and all that. It could really fuck you up. Or imagine a toddler. I don't know, a kid.
Yeah, if you venture out among the humans, but maybe in the future they'll just
stay among
the AIs.
You just stay among the AI.
Go ahead.
It might leave you ill prepared to venture out among the humans.
Among the humans.
Yeah.
Unlike us.
We lived our whole lives with humans.
We have objective views of ourselves and we read the room.
I mean, there's two generations. There are people who grew up without the internet, which you and me are in that category. And so we are at least comfortable with the idea of sitting with a book or not having, you know, an AirPods in our heads. Then there's a second category of people who grew up without AI companions, which the whole world is in this category now, but 10 years from now might be different.
AI native.
AI, exactly. Is this going to be covered in your book?
I don't think I'm going to get into AI nativity. I think I better wrap this book up pronto. Speaking of which, we should go into overtime.
Yeah. What are we going to talk about in overtime?
Well, we could talk about AI a little more. I want to give you a couple of more questions on the Beach Boys quiz and or the Sly Stone quiz. Wasn't there other stuff you wanted to...
I had something about Doomers, which I don't think we discussed, which is...
But
we talked about this a couple weeks ago, but I had a post about Doomers.
We did, but you wrote about it in your Small Potatoes newsletter. And we should talk about that.
Riots.
Oh, well, the LA, let's, I do want to talk about a little about the LA stuff, which is, there's some unsettling things happening in our country.
Can I give people a teaser for an analysis? And I want to give a shout out to a friend of mine, Azeem Sharif, who told me to think of it as a 2x2 grid, where on the one side is what the protesters do, on the other side is what the police do. And each of these breaks into two categories, violence and nonviolence. If they're both violent, it's a wash. If they're both nonviolent, it's a wash. The interesting cases are the cases where the protesters are violent and the police are not, or the police are violent and the protesters are not. And I kind of have, I think, the sort of centrist view that that these protests in some way are what Trump really wants for different reasons. And also that the category on the grid where the protesters are violent, burn down things, kill people, hurt people, and the police are restrained and ICE is restrained, is something which plays very well for Trump. And conversely, if there's excesses or deaths caused by the police or whatever, that can be very bad for Trump.
I will opine on this in overtime.
Okay. Didn't want to get that out, but good.
So, and you know how
could somebody not want to pay for overtime with this sort of setup?
There's a larger question here, is how exactly do people get access to overtime?
Yes.
By becoming paid subscribers to either the Small Potatoes newsletter or the Non-Zero newsletter.
Subscribership to either one will give you access. If you subscribe to both, you have twice the access.
And if you don't want to become a paid subscriber and aren't a subscriber at all, you could just become an unpaid subscriber. But then you won't know what we're about saying overtime, which is just going to be, I don't know, mind-blowing is putting it a little too mild.
We might mention you.
We might mention you. It's like, do you remember Romper Room? Well, we'll talk about it.
Yes, I do remember Romper Room.
You remember the mirror at the end?
Yes, I think Romper Room probably sparks schizophrenia in many people growing up later.
We'll talk about that. So, all right. Thanks, everybody. Please clap.
Smash the like button.
Jeb Bush. Smash the like button, clap, and follow us into overtime. Okay. Thank you.